Before we get into today's show, I have an urgent update to share with you. As you probably know, this podcast is made possible by the generous support of listeners like you. And with our financial year ending on June 30th, we're facing a $52,000 gap in funding that must be closed by this date. With just days to go, generous friends of the ministry have now offered to match every dollar given towards this goal up to $10,000. So please take a moment today to give your best gift at premierinsight.org/CS Lewis. That's premierinsight.org/CS Lewis. Thank you for understanding how important your gift is today and for giving generously. And now it's time for today's podcast.
Before we start today's show, I have some sad news to share with you. On Saturday, the 8th of June, Peter Kerridge, the longtime CEO of Premier, died following a year-long battle with acute leukemia. We are obviously heartbroken and our thoughts and prayers are with his family at this difficult time. If you'd like to share any messages or prayers or tributes about Peter and his legacy, then please do visit premier.org.uk.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Thank you for listening to the show that brings you the thought and theology of C.S. Lewis with me, Ruth Jackson. Discover more about Lewis by visiting premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, resources and podcasts. And you can also register there for the chance to win a free book. If you enjoy listening to the C.S. Lewis Podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it. But now for today's show.
The programme you are about to hear was originally broadcast on the Unbelievable podcast in December last year. To commemorate 60 years since C.S. Lewis's death, I hosted a special webinar with Professor Alistair McGrath, where he answered listeners' questions live. Here is the first part of that show. Today we're going to be talking about C.S. Lewis, one of the most influential voices in modern Christianity. The 20th century British writer and lay theologian has profoundly impacted Christians all around the world and brought many atheists and agnostics to faith in Jesus. On November the 22nd, 1963, Clive Staples Lewis, Jack to his friends, died in Oxford, England. And as you're probably aware, his death was somewhat overshadowed by the assassination of the US President John F. Kennedy on the exact same day. However, today we want to take some time to reflect on C.S. Lewis's life and ask a really important question. 60 years after his death, is there an expiry date on C.S. Lewis's relevant? I'm delighted that we're going to be joined by Professor Alistair McGrath, a C.S. Lewis scholar whose journey of faith in so many ways mirrors Lewis's own. Both men were raised in Northern Ireland, studied at Oxford University, and then they went on to become professors there. They also both came to faith from atheism slightly later in life. Alistair has written numerous books on Lewis, including a seminal biography, which I'm holding up by my head, so hopefully you can see it, called C.S. Lewis, A Life. I've had the great privilege of hosting the C.S. Lewis podcast with Alistair, which is a weekly show from Premier Unbelievable, and it explores C.S. Lewis's thought, his theology, and his teaching. So every Monday, we reflect on some of Lewis's ideas, his life, and his influence, and we do also try and answer some of the trickiest questions that impact culture today. Alistair, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and insight with us. And thank you for agreeing to answer some of our questions live on this webinar. It's not too late. Please do keep your questions coming in. Stick them in the Q&A tab. But Alistair, we've had lots of great questions so far. So I'm just going to throw them at you, if that's okay.
Sure, please do.
Someone has asked a question that I'm sure resonates with lots and lots of people. They want to know if you have got a favourite C.S. Lewis book or quote or idea.
Well, I think it depends on what day of the week it is. It's because Lewis writes so much. And, you know, if I'm doing one thing, I'll find one particular book helpful. If I'm talking to a different audience, I'll find perhaps a different book helpful. I think the important thing is that Lewis wrote so much that there's such a wide range of ideas or very helpful discussions that you can draw on them. The ones I keep coming back to are Mere Christianity and Surprised by Joy. But the great news is that, frankly, there's just so much there. We have an embarrassment of riches that, you know, you're spoiled for choice now. How often can you say that about a writer?
If I really, really had to push you, if you could only read one book for the rest of your life of C.S. Lewis, what would it be?
I think it might be mere Christianity. I'll tell you why. Because Lewis there was writing under constraints imposed by the British Broadcasting Corporation for these broadcast talks during the Second World War. And Lewis was given 1,200 or maybe 1,800 words, and that was it. And he had to put an awful lot of thought into a very short space. And he really showed himself able to really work under those limits very, very effectively. So I think it's a wonderful example of very concise, very effective use of argument and words. So to me, it's a masterpiece in many ways. And so that's probably the one I'd point to as being the best.
I don't know if anyone else has any thoughts on what their favourites are. I'd love to hear your thoughts. But Alistair, I'm going to go with some more questions. Someone has asked, in the last battle in the Narnia series, there are some terms which could be read as racist. Today, we quickly cancel writers, statues, etc. of the past who we reread as racist, etc. How should we process this with Lewis? Now, Alistair, I know we talked about this a little bit in the series that we did on the Narnia series on the C.S. Lewis podcast, but this is a really great question. So would you just share some of your thoughts about the sort of racist terms or potentially racist terms within some of Lewis's work?
Well, I think this is a very fair question. And certainly Lewis, writing, for example, during the 1940s or very early 1950s, you know, in many ways echoed some of the cultural views of his day. Not always. I must make it clear that he's quite independent of points, but certain unconscious bias, we might now say, is clearly there. But very often, what Lewis is doing is in effect using a depiction of someone as a challenge to our conventional ways of thinking about this. In other words, you know, in some of his novels, for example, and The Voyage of the Dawn Treader, Lewis depicts someone like Eustace Scrub in very negative ways. But in effect, it is to change our mind. You begin by thinking very negatively about Eustace, then you feel sorry for him, and then you're delighted when he becomes somebody much better. So I think there's a real problem here. And I think that we just have to say that Lewis does have to be read with this changed cultural context in mind. I can do that because I'm a historian, so I'm so used to stepping into the past and realizing there's a different world there. But I think what we have to say is that that's one of the reasons why I think some of Lewis's writings may prove problematic for some people today, because they do echo values from the past, which we now think are not simply past, but actually are very unhelpful indeed. So, you know, I think we all have to make up our own minds on this one, but there is an issue there.
Thank you, Alistair. And we've got another one around young readers. Obviously, the Narnia Chronicles were written for children, but this person is asking, how can we make sure that C.S. Lewis's work appeals to younger readers or seekers?
Well, I think one thing we can do is use the movies. I was very impressed by the movie version of The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, which I saw again recently, in fact. And it just what we find here is that very often people will see the movie and then think, hey, I want to read that. Just like, you know, people see the Tolkien movies and say, hey, I want to read the book. So I think that we can say that it's not necessary to begin with the book, but actually sometimes a movie about Lewis or a version of some of the Chronicles of Narnia actually makes you think, you know, I'm going to read that. That sounds rather good. And everyone knows the movie doesn't do justice to the novel, but very often the movie can be a way into the novel. So I think that's one way in which you can do it. The other thing you can do, of course, is if you've been deeply moved or affected by one of those books, is to talk about the difference it made. Because very often, that's what gets people reading this, to say, hey, they got something from it. I'm going to try it for myself and see what I get from it.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
We're going to take a quick break now, but if you are enjoying today's show, please do consider rating it and leaving a review on your podcast platform so that other people can discover it too.
I just wanted to quickly remind you that this podcast is made possible by the generosity of friends like you. And right now, we're facing a $52,000 funding gap that must be closed before the end of our financial year on June 30th. Generous friends of this ministry have offered to match every dollar given up to $10,000, so I'm asking you to give your very best gift right now. Your gift will help keep important conversations like this one coming to listeners like you. Closing this gap in full by June 30th is vital. So please give your best gift today, knowing your gift will be doubled. You can give now at premierinsight.org/ C.S. Lewis. That's premierinsight.org/C.S. Lewis. Thank you.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Welcome back to the show. We would love to hear your thoughts and ideas. Do get in touch on social media at Premier Unbelievable. Now let's return to the conversation. Alistair, I guess in many ways you sort of mentioned this when you're referring to the movies, but obviously lots of us have kind of moved into the digital space. That, you know, it's what we're doing now. We're recording over Zoom. And in many ways, Lewis was ahead of his time, wasn't he, in the way that he engaged with modern media? I mean, do you think this is part of how he continues to maintain his enduring relevance, even 60 years after his death?
Well, I think it is. I think there are two points to bring out here. One is that Lewis's works are widely discussed on the web. And very often that's the way in for a lot of people. They read discussions of Lewis and say, hey, I'm going to follow through on that. That sounds really interesting. But the other thing is just that very often those discussions of Lewis are not simply pointing you to Lewis. They are, in effect, witnessing to Lewis, if I can put it like that. They're saying, I find this guy really interesting. Here's why. And very often, someone who has a problem reads a piece by an author online who's talking about how Lewis helped them with exactly that problem and say, right, I'm going to read Lewis and see how he helps me. So I think if I can put it like this, the modern digital age is really extending Lewis's reach, especially in nations where the governments are not particularly friendly towards Christianity, where in effect you're able to smuggle Lewis in, so to speak, through electronic means.
That you mentioned the smuggling Lewis in there. Someone has asked whether there is anyone who uses C.S. Lewis really well in the writing that they're doing now.
Well, I think it's a very difficult question to answer because in many ways, Lewis's influence is quite often indirect in the sense that he's showing how you can combine an appeal to reason, to the imagination, to human feelings. And actually, it's been so successful and so influential that there are many people now who are doing precisely this, who aren't aware really that Lewis lies behind this new interest in these things. So I think it is really quite an important point to make. But certainly, I would say that looking in particular at a lot of American preaching in recent years, I've seen a growing emphasis in saying it's not just about understanding Christianity, it's about connecting up with it. It's about, in effect, letting it appeal to your imagination, letting it shape the way you feel about things. And so I think that there's been a recognition that actually Lewis is talking sense here, that in many ways he's giving us a way of showing that Christianity is not just about thinking, it's about transformation. And that's really important because of the rise of this thing called deconstruction, where very often Christians begin to lose a sense of what difference their faith makes. And Lewis, I have to say, makes it really easy to reconnect people with the deeper meaning of the Christian faith, seeing it as something far more than just believing certain things to be true, but rather here are these things which, because they are true, they are transformative, they make me a new person, they give me hope, and so on. So I think there's a lot there for preachers to latch on to.
Well, and I guess on that note, someone has asked, is there a budding C.S. Lewis today, do you think, Alistair? Is there a kind of a modern day C.S. Lewis, or is that just sacrilege to the comparison?
I mean, that question is very often asked, and I have to say there's only one C.S. Lewis, really. There may be people who are able to replicate part of what Lewis achieved, but actually bringing everything together is very, very unusual. What I think we might ask is, you know, are the people who are in effect moving Lewis's approach ahead? In other words, basing themselves on Lewis, and in effect, just saying we can do some very interesting things to connect up with a culture which is very different from what Lewis himself knew. And that's one of the reasons why I personally think Lewis has an ongoing history, why he's going to continue to be relevant, because there are so many people who are in effect taking Lewis and adapting him to new situations. The example I would give is the late Tim Keller in New York at Redeemer Church, where Keller was very, very good at adapting Lewis to a Manhattan audience. He shortened him in some ways. He expanded his vision in some ways. But he found that Lewis was ideal when adapted in some ways to connecting up with a very sophisticated Manhattan audience. And I think there are many more who do very much the same thing. And the important thing is to encourage people to be creative about Lewis. In other words, saying, look, here's what Lewis did. Now, let's build on that and make it clear we're doing that. But that extends his reach.
It's interesting you mentioned Tim Keller there, because I know he used to say that if he didn't know what to say, he would quote C.S. Lewis and that would be his sermon. And someone has actually asked a question here, which I think is potentially related. Is there a danger that Christians overuse Lewis? I'm not saying that Tim Keller overused Lewis, but is there a danger that Christians overuse Lewis by shoehorning Lewis quotes into sermons and social posts? And do we, by doing this, rob his words of their power by overuse?
Well, the short answer is yes, this is a real danger. I mean, I have one or two friends who've told me that they use Lewis a lot in their sermons. And very often he knows the congregation saying, oh, no, here comes the Lewis quote. He can't break the habit. He's kind of become addicted to C.S. Lewis. I think that you can get round this, I think, by in effect using Lewis's ideas, but not necessarily his words. And you know, so you don't pepper your sermons with C.S. Lewis quotes. What you're doing is you are making sure that you adapt Lewis to your audiences so that you're always speaking to the audience and weaving in ideas which you get from C.S. Lewis. But that's more likely to help your audiences because it's going to make them think two things. Number one, that we know Lewis lies behind that sermon we've heard, but actually connects up very, very well with thoughts we've had. And secondly, well, that was such a good sermon. I'm going to read Lewis and see how he might help me take this further. So I think there are ways you can do this. But your questioner is absolutely right. There is a danger that simply preachers cite C.S. Lewis and people say, oh, no, not again.
Well, I guess this is actually quite related as well. Someone has asked, are there any writers today that you've discovered who are able to capture that Lewis-esque ability to make sense of reason and point to Christianity? I mean, you mentioned that if you're a good preacher and you're using Lewis well, that you can do that in your sermons. But do you think there's anyone writing that is able to do that? I guess one of the things we talked about already is the difference between the imagination and the reason, and Lewis was able so beautifully to capture both. But who else is doing that, and how are they doing it? And I guess I'm just going to add a little bit, how do we make sure that we're doing that in our own conversations, in our sermons, in our writing? How do we capture both the imagination and the heart?
Well, that's a very good question. A good example would be Francis Spufford in his book Unapologetic. Now, that's not well known in the States, I'm afraid, but he's a British writer, a very able novelist, and he wrote a book called Unapologetic, which is about how Christianity makes emotional sense. And of course, that's one of the themes in what Lewis is writing. And actually, it connected up very well with the secular audience here in Britain. So, you know, there are people like that who are doing this. But I think, if I may say so, I think that the major impact really is on preaching in churches at the moment. But we do need to think about taking this further. Are there, at big American seminaries, for example, classes on how to write novels, which in effect communicate the Christian faith? What are we doing about, using the form of novels to, in effect, bring out what Christianity is and show how it connects up? I think there's some really good questions to ask here. And I'm sure that, my listeners will think, oh, I think I know somebody who've done that kind of thing. And I'm sure you're right. But at the moment, we need more people like that, I'm afraid.
Thank you for listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast with me, Ruth Jackson. Discover more about Lewis by visiting premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, resources, and podcasts. And do register there for the chance to win a free book. That's premierunbelievable.com. If you enjoy listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.